Hello, this is Paul Sollendrop, Wichita State University Strategic Communications. Thank you for listening to the Roundhouse Podcast. We're going to talk to two of the new men's basketball assistant coaches, Quincy Acey and Chris Hollander, on the podcast. We will get to associate head coach Kenton Paulino as soon as we can. So here we go with Quincy Acey and Chris Hollander. Our first guest is Quincy Acey. Quincy played at Baylor on two Elite Eight teams, so if you're a follower of basketball over the years, you will recognize that name. He played in the NBA for seven seasons, the bulk of which with the Kings and the Nets. He spent last season as player development coach in the G League with the Texas Legends, part of the Dallas Mavericks organization. Quincy, tell us about your background with Paul Mills and why you came to work for him.
Yeah, so first of all, thank you for the introduction. Glad to be here. But me and Coach Mills, we go way back. You know, he recruited me coming out of high school, and he was the guy that was pretty much heading the recruiting process. So, you know, we got really close. You know, I would DM him on, I think it was like MySpace or something back then, you know. So we just have always had a really good relationship. You know, somebody that cares, he's somebody that is very passionate when he speaks, and, you know, he kind of gets people on board very easily. So whenever he asked me to come work for him, and he always told me that whenever I was done playing and wanted to become a coach, he would hire me. So, you know, he's a man of his word, and he called me. You know, I didn't even have to reach out to him, and, you know, he offered me a job. So I'm happy to be here and learn from him. You know, he's been such an integral part of winning at Baylor or Roberts. You know, he's a culture builder. So, you know, I'm happy to be a part of it.
So he identified you early as a player who would be a good coach or would like to get into coaching. How did that work? What do you think he saw in you in those early days?
I think he saw the passion, how much I cared, and just my will to win. You know, I wasn't a highly touted player. I wasn't the most skilled, you know, but it was just sheer will. And, you know, I mean, a high character. You know, my mom is a wonderful person, and she's preached high character and treating people the way you want to be treated, and, you know, all those small things that have really developed me to be the man that I am today. So I think he saw that early on, and, you know, he saw that there would be a need for that in his business. So
Paul Mills said he thinks he may still have a DM from you when you were 15 that kind of laid out your life's path, and it all basically played out right to a large degree. Were you always that kind of organized, goal-driven young person?
Definitely goals. You know, my mom was real big on, like, writing your goals. So I remember my senior year, I wrote a list of goals before my senior year started, and I stuck to them. I put them on my bathroom mirror, and, you know, all of them pretty much came true, you know. So, yeah, I mean, when you make a plan, I think, you know, having a plan is the main key. And, yeah, you know, goals come with it.
What was Paul Mills like as a recruiter?
Paul Mills is a recruiter. He's more so just kind of, well, when he was an assistant, you know, just kind of get you to relate to him a little more. You know, he would show you pictures of him playing and, you know, all of those small things that kids like, you know. So he knew how to do it. He had a list of things that worked, and I see that he's still using a lot of those things. So it's good to see, and I think the whole Baylor program had a lot of those same recruiting tactics. You know, you look at Coach Tang at Kansas State, he's doing the same thing. Even Matthew Driscoll down at North Florida, you know, those guys they come from the same tree. So it's the Scott Drew School of Recruiting.
Yeah, that Baylor coaching tree is certainly going through a great period.
It is.
Wichita State, what was appealing about coming here and coaching this basketball program?
I played with Clint Anthony early with the Knicks, and he always spoke. I think he was on the Final Four team,
right,
if I'm not mistaken. So, you know, he always raved about the fans and the culture here. So, you know, I was always a player that the fans loved and gravitated and played off of the energy of the fans. So being in this environment, being able to coach and help implement the same mindset into the players that they can feed off these fans, you know, it's a no-brainer. You know, it's coming to a place where basketball is king. You know, it's all I care about. So, you know, I'm just surrounding myself and immersing myself with basketball and around great human beings.
Favorite memory from playing at Baylor?
The Elite Eight run, my first year, my sophomore year, I think that was the most memorable because it was the first time we went to postseason in quite some time, well, at least the NCAA tournament. And then, I mean, we just had a great run. It was a storybook run. We eventually lost to the champions, Duke, in the Elite Eight. But, I mean, that Elite Eight round was in Houston. I think at the Reliant Stadium, it was an immense amount of fans. You know, people were coming over from all over the country to support us. So those are great times, you know, and those are the times that I would hope to kind of pass along to these guys and tell them, like, all this work is going to be worth it in the end, you know, whenever you get to kind of reap the benefits and everybody's cheering for you and loving you and you're just playing off of pure just equity in all your work that you've done over the year, you know. So I think that's the most fulfilling part of that tournament run, and that's my most memorable part.
Favorite memory from playing in the NBA?
I would just say my first NBA minutes. Rookie year, I was not dressing out to start the season, and then a couple guys got hurt. So then I was able to dress out, and the first game that I was on the roster officially was when we played in Dallas, and that's my hometown. My mom, my dad, my grandmother, all my friends, old teachers, friends. I had so many people in the building, and that was my first time getting my first NBA minutes. Played like 3 minutes, but the ovation was through the roof when I checked in for the first time, and I would never forget that. That was the most memorable time.
I bet that was a great moment.
For sure.
Who is the former NBA teammate, maybe doesn't have to be a star, doesn't have to be anybody we've really heard of, but somebody who really helped show you the ropes, what it means to be a professional, that kind of influence in your life?
Aaron Gray. Big Aaron Gray. Went to Pitt. Oh, man, he's my vet. We still talk to this day. He's, you know, kind of getting me in on the real estate aspect of things. He's doing really well in that field. He took on the coaching role, and then he pivoted to real estate. So, you know, I'm able to kind of pull from him still. But, I mean, he showed me the way. I think he was like a 5 to 6 year vet when I came in, and he would come in and work out with me when I was a rookie, when he didn't have to. You know, he was there. He would come in and lift with me. He made me run extra sprints with him after practice. Anytime he saw me in the training room for something small, you know, he would give me a hard time. You know, he really just showed me how to be a professional every day. And even when things aren't going my way. And, you know, I would forever have love for Aaron Gray. You know, that's my big fellow.
Okay, interesting. So you described yourself as a grinder in college, NBA. You played for a lot of different teams. You weren't the star. Do you think having that kind of an experience of having to work hard and having to know your role and be willing to play your role, do you think that helps you as a coach? Can you pass on those traits to college athletes?
For sure. I mean, I said this a while back when I was getting interviewed, I think when I was playing, but you had to be a star in your role. You know, everybody can't be a star player, but you can star in your role. And it's room for those guys. You know, never in my life have I ever scored over 30 points, ever, or scored 30 points, period. But I had one of the longest NBA careers out of anybody I've played with at any level. And, you know, it's because I starred in my role. And I can pass that along and, you know, kind of like Emil's alluded to earlier, you know, I walk the walk, you know, so I can just show these guys what it takes. I can be that example for them. And, you know, I was a great leader when I played. And so I think I'm young enough to still reach these guys and gain the respect enough to help them to get better. You know, that's the ultimate goal, really. All of these things and all these sacrifices is for them to get better. And even if they don't make it at a professional level, they'll make it in life, because to be successful in anything in life is going to require sacrifices and hard work. So,
what kind of things did you learn as an NBA player from the different coaches that will help you in this job that you can pass on to the Shockers?
Mm-hmm. Slowing down when I played, you know, be quick but not in a hurry. You know, like, I was just balls to the wall every time I played, you know, and they were kind of able to help me channel that energy and see the game through a different lens. And, you know, I think that was really what helped my longevity. You know, I was kind of able to slow the game down and play at a different pace, but also still use my burst and my aggression to apply myself when needed. So I think that'll be the biggest thing that I can offer, is just kind of helping these guys see the game through a different lens.
Who is the, doesn't have to be an NBA player, but maybe it is, who's the NBA player you tell your guys to get on YouTube and watch highlights of the, how this guy plays?
Oh, it differs for each player. I've already started my work with, like, Harlan and the big fella of, I've wrote down what I've seen, I've watched their clips, and then I've made, like, a NBA comp already for somebody for them to watch. So, you know, that's kind of my thing. You just, it's not like a comparison as far as, like, that's who they should, you know, strive to play like, but, you know, just kind of things that they can take from these guys that I think will help their game. So that's the biggest part for me. You know?
And the two people you're talking about, the two newest shockers, Harlan Beverly, a transfer from Miami, mm-hmm. and then Jacob Germany,
yes,
the transfer from Texas mm-hmm. San Antonio. So they're already getting videos and getting a little start.
Not yet. I've got it ready, though, to show them. Yeah. You know, I got to establish a relationship first before I kind of come in hot.
So why did you decide to get into coaching?
Oh, man. I mean, everybody's always told me that I would make a good coach. You know, my mom, other coaches, other players. So my mom's a teacher. My grandmother was a teacher. So I think maybe that is kind of one and the same. You know, it's teaching the game, really. So I maybe have a gift. And I just kind of, you know, it's God's calling. It's just kind of he ordered my path to help me fall right into this line of work. So I love it. And it's fulfilling for me. And guys don't get this opportunity, you know, a lot. So I'm taking full advantage of it, and I'm putting my all into it.
So Paul Mills, it appears he has assembled a coaching staff full of excellent shooters. Who wins a game of horse on this coaching staff? Do you have an opinion on that?
Oh, you know, I'm a competitor, so it's got to be me.
Right.
It's got to be me. And I'm the youngest, so, you know, I'm not too far removed from playing.
Okay, that makes sense. We hear a lot about, since Paul Mills has been here and as Jerome Tang, the Baylor coaching staff has kind of been more on our radar now, we hear a lot about the coaching staff pouring themselves into athletes. Mm-hmm. Describe that for us. What's that mean?
I think just being themselves, being unapologetically themselves. I mean, you see the clips of Coach Tang before the game, and he's doing the that's him. That's who he's always been. You know, it's a little offbeat, a little, but he's just trying to reach the guys and pouring himself into those guys. And I think Mills is the same way. You know, like, again, the quote is, the guys don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And, you know, I think that's the biggest part of just pouring yourself into these guys. You know, they can see it. You know, they can see how much you care. They can see if you're kind of sugarcoating things or just kind of telling them stuff that they want to hear in the moment. You know, but I think when you're genuine in your approach and every day, I think guys can see it.
Who makes the best salsa around?
Jessica Acey. That's my wife. Her dad's Mexican. Her mom's black. So her Mexican side of the family, her grandfather had like this family recipe and he passed along. So now her and her sister make it. It's called Sissy Salsa. They just got into the Dallas Farmers Market, so they've been making tremendous strides with that, and I mean it's taken off. So it'll be here in Wichita, and she's looking forward to, you know, getting you guys some salsa.
Sissy's Salsa. Give us a brief description. What's it taste like?
Fresh, all natural ingredients. It's fresh. You have to refrigerate it, so it's not like, you know, your typical salsa off the shelf, but it's fresh, like the cilantro, the tomatoes, all of the fresh vegetables ingredients really give it that pop. And it has a little bit of a kick. They're working on their second flavor now. It's a green one, a green salsa that's a little more thick, has a little fruity taste, and is a little spicier. So they're making real good strides, man, and it's exciting. So
excellent. Quincy, thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Hi, this is Rick Miuma, president of Wichita State University. Check out the latest episode of the Forward Together podcast. Each episode, I sit down with different guests from Shocker Nation to celebrate the vision and mission of Wichita State University. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Our next guest is assistant coach Chris Hollander. Chris played at Evansville from 1995 to 1998. He was a second-team All-Missouri Valley Conference player as a senior. He has worked as an assistant coach at Army, Evansville, Mississippi State, UMKC, and Missouri. So, Chris, tell us about your background with Paul Mills and why you came to work for him at Wichita State.
Actually, Coach and I really didn't have much of a relationship before we started talking about this opportunity with him. It went really fast, and we know a lot of the same people. We lean on a lot of the same people, and you know how it is in this business where, you know, sometimes a suggestion leads to something greater. And we got the opportunity to have a bunch of conversations. I came over here, and that's why I'm here.
Coaching at Wichita State, what was appealing about that?
Well, I mean, obviously, being an opponent and coming in here as a player in college and then also as an assistant coach at Evansville, I understand the culture here. I don't understand it in depth yet, but I understand how important basketball is at Wichita State. Every time we walked in this building, there were 10,000 people and totally engaged and very knowledgeable about the game of basketball and very passionate. And so and then the recent success in the last 10 years, the amount of success that Wichita State basketball's had, and it's a tremendous opportunity and one that I have a ton of respect for.
So working with Marty Simmons, I find that interesting because I always thought he did a really good job at a school that probably didn't have resources that some of the other ones did. How did Marty do it? How did you and the coaching staff do that at Evansville?
You know, Evansville is a very unique job, and Jim Cruz and Marty Simmons are the only two guys that have really had any success there since the Coach McCutcheon eras, and you know, back in the 60s and 70s, and it's a unique campus situation, and so I think you have to really understand the landscape of the recruiting areas, the type of kids that you get there that can come and be successful. And then you have to be unique in the way that you play. And both Coach Cruz and Coach Simmons both were big motion guys. Coach Simmons, I think in the year that Wichita went to the Final Four, you maybe correct me if I'm wrong, but I think they beat them twice that year and on senior night at home that year. And so it's almost like the wishbone and the option, triple option at the service academy is trying to be unique, and because of your circumstances, it's the same thing at Evansville. We recruited a certain type of kid, and then we played a certain type of way, and we ended up having some really good players, and our system really facilitated that.
So Colt Ryan, DJ mm-hmm. Ballantyne would be mm-hmm. probably two of the names that Shocker fans mm-hmm. would remember from those days. I know from watching, I guess, all of those games, that was always a game the Shockers kind of dreaded. It was always going to be a challenge.
Yeah, I mean, it was going to be because, you know, both teams were built on, you know, toughness, grit, and physicality, and in those type of games, and super well coached on both sides of the ball, you know, on both sides, both teams, both sides of the ball, well prepared, and it was going to come down to a one or two or three possessions, a mistake here, an offensive rebound here, a missed free throw or whatever. I mean, we had a game here, and it was Ned Cox and Colt Ryan that was their freshman year, and it was a 2-point game with 3.5 seconds to go, and we threw the ball in. We had to go the length of the floor, and we threw the ball in Ned Cox, and he went down, pulled up from the hash, and got fouled on a three, and they called it with 0.5 seconds. And I mean, I thought the place was going to come down. Everybody was just, and he walked up to that foul line. I've never been in a louder building in my life. He missed the first one, and then I mean, the second one, he stepped up there, and the building was so loud that the backboard was vibrating, and it shook our table up there and turned our computer off. And so he made those two, but it always came down to stuff like that when we played Wichita, and a tremendous amount of respect for the program and the tradition, the history of the program.
So take us through your journey. Why did you get into coaching?
I got into coaching because the way that I was coached in college. I got into coaching for the way I was coached in high school because I had the ability to be coached and have things brought out of me by people who cared about me and had a genuine interest in the successes that I had after I was done playing basketball. And my high school coach and my college coach both were that for me. And I felt like that was my calling, is to be that type of person for young people. And my passion is to help others. And so that's kind of why I started coaching.
So from Jim Cruz to Marty Simmons to Konzo Martin, you've been around a lot of different coaches. Give us some insight into what you've taken from maybe one or two of those. Who has really influenced your coaching style?
They've all really influenced me in a lot of different ways. You know, I had the ability to work with two of my best friends in the world, Rick Ray at Mississippi State and Kareem Richardson, who was my college roommate at Evansville. You know, but all five of the guys that I've worked to prior to being here, to a man, are all high character people. And that's the most important thing for me, is being around really good people and people that want to see other people succeed, specifically the guys that we're going to be coaching. And so that's really what, you know, my last stop, Konzo Martin taught me a lot about a lot of things, but about how important, you know, the whole person development is, and the ability to have really, really good relationships and pour into people. And all those other guys are really good at that as well. But I just want to talk about my last stop, and Coach Martin might be the best at it that there is. And so I learned a lot from him there. Obviously, Jim Cruz was my college coach. He taught us about, you know, being good husbands, being good fathers, but also he taught us about toughness and the definition of it and what it meant, and not just physically tough, but, you know, the mental tough part of it. And I can go down the line on all these guys, but every one of them has really affected me in a positive way.
Yeah, that phrase, pouring yourself into players, we've heard that a lot now. I think both here at Wichita State since Paul Mills arrived, mm-hmm. and as Jerome Tang and the Baylor coaching tree has become more on our radar. Describe that. What's that mean to you, pouring yourself into your players?
I mean, I think it's just an unselfish, you know, constant way of just making sure that you're present, making sure that you are giving them everything for them, not for you, and in order to try to get everything you can out of them. I think specifically in this time, because I've coached in multiple different eras now. I'm the old guy, right? But I've coached in multiple different eras, and in this generation, I feel like the relationship piece and the ability to get them to be themselves around you will allow you to get more and more out of these young people. I see it with my own son, you know, just making, you know, there's got to be a relationship. You have to be present. And so I think there's a number of ways you can pour into guys, but I think genuinely being concerned with their day-to-day well-being is the number one thing. Having conversations about what's going on in their lives. They're obviously going to be at practice, and they're obviously going to get pushed to be really good basketball players. But what's going on with your family? What's going on in class? What's going on with your girlfriend? What's going on with your sister? How are you doing? You know, I think a lot of times we lose track of that. And so that's kind of what my vision of pouring into people is just being present and having a genuine interest in their day-to-day lives and helping where you can.
So Paul Mills has apparently assembled a coaching staff of really good basketball shooters. I know you were an excellent shooter.
I don't know about that one. I wasn't allowed to shoot. So
who wins a game of horse on this basketball staff? Do you have an opinion on
me.
That?
I know that. It's not me. I mean, obviously, Quincy played in the NBA for a really long time, so he would probably be my bet, but I don't know about KP, so I just know it's not going to be me.
Well, Quincy already said he thought he would win it, so you're on the right track there, apparently, according to Quincy. Is there a picture of you in your Evansville uniform on the wall at Taroni's Pizza?
Maybe. I have a picture of it on my phone. Because when people ask, like, you try to explain, you know, the sleeve jerseys, and they don't understand what that's all about. And then not only do you have to show them a picture, but then you have to explain, you know, the tradition and what it stood for and what we stood for. And, you know, and Coach got us all to believe in those sleeves. And they were, when you played in them, you didn't think about it because you were thinking about, you know, winning. But like there were times in practice where they'd get like heavy, but the traditions and the traditions of what those sleeves stand for and stood for and still do stand for is exactly what Evansville basketball, in my mind, is all about. The former players were, they were our heroes at Evansville. And every day, Coach reminded us about what they had done and what they had built and what they didn't have in order for us to, you know, the old make it better than you found it, keep, you know. And so they were our heroes. They were the guys we looked up to. They wore the sleeves. We wore the sleeves. And it really kind of gave us a competitive advantage to it, because when teams would see us warm up and we'd be out there in those big jerseys and we'd be, you know, just kind of looking, they probably thought we looked a little goofy or whatever. But then when the ball went up, it was as competitive a game as they've ever played. And so it kind of gave us a little bit of a competitive advantage. But we understood the tradition of the championships of the Jerry Sloans and the Larry Humes and all the guys that came way before us, and then the guys that came right before us, and the Andy Elkins, Reed Jacksons of the world. So that's what it was for us.
I had never thought about that. So you practiced in the sleeves and a practice jersey version of the sleeves, correct, or in the actual uniforms?
They were heavy, heavy practice jersey sleeved, and they were giant. They were huge, and they would get very, very sweaty. And so most of us had two that we would keep for each practice loop. And so during the middle of practice, you'd take it off and put on a new one because it was just so. And they were big and thick and heavy back then. But I would assume now they probably got a better material than they would have used back then. But, yeah, we practiced in them as well. Absolutely.
So to give people the background, listeners who might not be familiar, Evansville, well-known for wearing sleeved basketball jerseys, tradition that dated back to Arid McCutchen, as you mentioned. They had great – I think they won five – what was the time called? The College Division. College Division NCAA Championships. Had great players. You mentioned Jerry Sloan, Dom Boozy.
Yes.
Played for Evansville. And then, Chris, when you played there in the late 90s, they wore the sleeves. And then Taroni's is, in my mind, I guess, the famous pizza place in Evansville. I went there a couple times in my travels there. So
yeah, you know it.
Those are the Evansville references, just to get people caught up on all of that. Tell us about, what's this transition like? I'm sure it's got to be a whirlwind. So this is your first week or few days. What's on the to-do list for a new coach in a situation like this?
Well, obviously you have your day-to-day stuff with the basketball program. You know, you got the guys that are on campus now having some workouts. And then recruiting, obviously, is a big part of what we're doing right now. And then really that's trying to just get organized. Again, you're trying to take a drink out of a fire hose a little bit, but mostly just normal day-to-day stuff that would go into any basketball program operation, and also trying to find a place to live and trying to figure out schools and things of that nature for my family. But really, that's about it.
So you have all those normal family kind of things.
Correct,
that everybody goes through. Last question, who is the basketball player that you tell your guys to, hey, get on YouTube and watch how this guy plays? You can learn something from him.
Oh, man, that's a great question. I think Isaiah Thomas for guards. Isaiah Thomas and John Stockton, I think, are two guys that really played the game the right way at the point guard spot. Man, there's a ton of guys that you can go back to that just – you know, there was Kenneth Faried was a guy that we talked about. In fact, we would show clips of Kenneth Faried playing from the night before. And I got this from a buddy of mine. He was telling me that he was doing it with his team. And so I started pulling. And Kenneth Faried was a guy that didn't shoot the ball outside of 6 feet and ended up making millions and millions of dollars in the NBA. And we'd show clips of him just playing at just an incredibly high octane level, just playing hard and getting offensive rebounds and putbacks and all these different things, and ended up being on a USA basketball team and ended up being in the NBA for a long time just on effort. And so I think there's a ton of different examples that you can, you know, you can show Dennis Rodman rebounding clips. You can show, I mean, there's Kyrie Irving and his just ability to make different types of layups, you know. So I don't know if there's one guy in particular that I'd point to, but some of those old guys, like, I think it's good for guys to watch some of those older guys, the way that they played and how easy they made the game.
Chris Hollander, thanks for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Roundhouse Podcast, courtesy of Wichita State University Strategic Communications. We encourage you to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. You can find more Roundhouse content at GoShockers.com.
It's over! It is over! Ladies and gentlemen, say it slowly and savor it. Wichita State is going to the Final Four for the first time in 48 years.
Unbelievable. What a scene, folks. The Shocker fans are just going crazy in the stands.
Just maybe the greatest win in the history of Wichita State basketball.